most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It is Tuesday, May 22nd. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Tuesdays here on the Audio Stash, we have our weekly Government at Work segment looking at state legislative reform happening around the country. This week, we'll speak with Dominic Holden of Washington State Normal about some changes that were enacted there recently regarding Washington's medical marijuana program. Also on the Audio Stash today, we have some event audio from the Belcourt Theater benefit concert for Bernie Ellis that took place in Nashville a few weeks ago. We'll hear Alan St. Pierre, the MC of the event, on stage kick things off, and then some extremely fine music from Joan L. Mosser, who's a big star there in the Nashville music scene, and she's got a great sound, as you'll hear today. Let's open up the stash right away with our Government at Work segment. Another installment of our Audio Stash Government at Work series. We're looking at a piece of legislation this week that recently passed regarding Washington State's medical marijuana law. Washington State has an active medical access program, and the recent law enacted a few changes and clarifications to the practice of the law. Joining us to discuss the recent bill and those changes is Dominic Holden, who's with Washington State Normal. Dominic also sits on the board of directors for National Normal. Dominic, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Great to speak with you today, Dominic. Now, tell us about the legislation that passed there recently.
On May 8th, our governor, Christine Gregoire, signed Senate Bill 6032 into law. And it makes about four significant changes. The first is it allows the Department of Health to set presumptive supplies for medical marijuana patients. Under the existing law, patients are allowed to have a 60-day supply. Law enforcement doesn't know what that is. Patients don't know what that is. And because they only have an affirmative defense once they get to court, that means a lot of patients are arrested. So we hope that when the Department of Health sets these guidelines by July 2008, that patients will avoid arrest simply by being under that presumptive amount, which is supposed to be the outside limit for patients who would need the most amount of medical marijuana. The second thing that it does is it clarifies who can provide the medical marijuana. It used to say that person had to be a primary caregiver, and they had to provide all of the other care for the patient. Now it's simply a designated provider who's designated to either cultivate or give the medicine to the medical marijuana patient. So that gives a lot of protection to the patient and to the person who provides it for them. The next thing that the bill clears up is what a law enforcement officer does if they encounter medical marijuana. It used to be that officers could be criminally liable if they did not seize and destroy the medical marijuana. This clears that up so they can just take a small amount for testing but leave the medical marijuana with the patient. And then finally, it strengthens doctors' protections and it protects them from any type of state criminal prosecution that could possibly arise.
And when you talk about patients being arrested there, have you seen a lot of that, Dominic?
Absolutely. For a while, I worked at the ACLU of Washington, and one of my jobs was to acquire stories from people who had had law enforcement contact in Washington. I simply put the word out to activists and medical marijuana patients around the state, and I had a flood of calls come in. And the vast majority of the calls were for medical marijuana patients, and they were people in small towns and these small jurisdictions unfamiliar with the medical marijuana law in Washington. And even though they had their doctor's authorization, and even though they had an amount that would clearly be within a 60-day supply for a patient, they were arrested anyway, simply because law enforcement doesn't know what the amount is. They were getting arrested, and they often had charges against them, usually dropped, but after a very traumatizing experience of being arrested and having their home raided and having to hire an attorney. Hopefully we can avoid all of those traumas for a patient by clarifying the amount that each patient can have.
Now, how does the medical marijuana program differ in Washington State rather than, say, California?
Under their law, they passed an amending bill a few years ago that requires patients to carry a card. We don't have any card system in Washington State, and we only have an affirmative defense. First off, California marijuana possession is decriminalized. We don't have a decriminalization law, so anyone can be arrested, put in jail for up to 90 days and pay a $1,000 fine for possession if you're a medical marijuana patient or not. It's not the case in California. Up here in Washington State, without that card, without being able to verify who's a patient at the point of law enforcement contact, any of them could be arrested at any time. The California law, I believe, has a no-arrest provision, so they don't even risk getting arrested even if they have a large amount, so long as they have their card and appear to be in compliance with the medical marijuana statute.
And Dominic, how is medical marijuana viewed there across Washington State, also among law enforcement? I know they're bound to arrest patients because of the wording of the law there, but you know, how do law enforcement officers view medical marijuana patients in Washington?
Well, Chris, that is a very good question, and the answers are all across the board. It's a big state. And in many ways, it's a divided state with the Cascade Mountains running right down the middle. Western Washington is known as being very progressive. It's lush. It's filled with evergreens. And on the eastern side, it's desert. It's very conservative. And law enforcement is not familiar with the medical marijuana law for the most part. A poll was conducted in 2006 that showed that 75% of people in Washington, 75% of voters, did not know that there was a medical marijuana law. Only 25% knew that Washington State even had one, even though it passed in 1998. And 50% of the voters had actually insisted that there was no medical marijuana law at all. And, you know, there are possibly many reasons for this. People misread the Supreme Court rulings. They hear the announcements from the FDA. They hear there's a DEA bust where they don't recognize a medical marijuana patient. but that translates to a misunderstanding of the general public and law enforcement as well. So you can look to places like King County, which is home to Seattle, and law enforcement is very familiar with medical marijuana issues, and they're generally quite compassionate to medical marijuana patients. You go to Central Washington, to places like Yakima, where the climate is conservative, familiarity with medical marijuana and marijuana in general is quite low, and law enforcement, either they don't know about the law or they frankly don't care. And while they don't have to arrest people under our law, because they're allowed to, they often have elected to. And we hope that through the passage of 6032, we can educate law enforcement through the high-profile process of lobbying the Department of Health and setting these presumptive guidelines so law enforcement around the state will know, particularly when they receive notices from the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chief or the Washington Association of Prosecuting Attorneys. So there will be an across-the-board knowledge of the current status of marijuana for qualified patients in Washington.
And in Washington, does the medical marijuana program have very set conditions that patients must have in order to get a doctor's recommendation?
Absolutely it does. Patients qualify by having HIV or AIDS, cancer, glaucoma, wasting syndromes, and it also includes intractable pain. And what we would expect to see, in fact, over the next many months through the Department of Health lobbying process is that patients will come before them who have conditions that are treated by medical marijuana that are not currently included under the law, and the Department of Health can make recommendations to include those conditions in future amendments.
Well, Dominic, it sounds like these changes will work for the benefit of almost everyone there, and it also seems like the legislature and the governor are quite sophisticated in how all of this works.
Absolutely. When you say it's something that suits everybody, in many ways that's true. Jeanie Cole Wells, who is really the champion of medical marijuana in the Washington legislature, joined to introduce this bill with Senator McCaslin, who's a conservative senator from the far corner of eastern Washington. And there is support from the governor, there's support from the ACLU of Washington, who lobbied heavily for the bill, and a number of medical marijuana patients. That said, there are some patients who disagreed with this. They felt that the legislation did not go far enough. They wanted to see a no-arrest provision included, which was in the original version of the bill but got removed. They also wanted to see a provision that allows for cooperative cultivation, which was in the original version of the bill but got removed at the request of the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. And I deeply sympathize with the patients, but I also understand where law enforcement is coming from. They're in a difficult place, where if they walk into what looks like a commercial grow operation and they see 1,500 plants, if there's a no-arrest provision, their hands are tied, even though it's clearly in violation of the medical marijuana law. So they would like to see some sort of per-patient supply that they can use to gauge whether or not a no-arrest provision can be put in place, and also whether or not people are cultivating cooperatively under the law. Now, I, of course, believe in full marijuana law reform, and so I understand that these are incremental measures as we move from really a state of total prohibition, but clearly the people that we need to care for first are those who deserve our compassion, who are suffering. It's not just about those people whose lives are hurt if they're in prison for having marijuana, but those people who would suffer or lose their lives if they didn't have marijuana.
Dominic, you mentioned there was not a statewide decriminalization in Washington. You know, but Seattle does have a very progressive approach to adult marijuana possession for medical use and other reasons. You know, does that make the Seattle area attractive to patients around the state who might move into that area for easier access in regards to their medicine?
Well, Seattle has deprioritized marijuana law enforcement. In 2003, they passed Initiative 75 that made marijuana possession by adults the city's lowest law enforcement priority. And this is also the largest metropolitan center in Washington state. by far. So I think just simply by the laws of population density, there are going to be more medical marijuana patients here. And also a lot of patients have to work together to cultivate their marijuana, as many are too sick to cultivate their own. And there is, of course, a greater knowledge of the medical marijuana law in this jurisdiction. So I think it's safer for patients here generally. But they are all over the state. I think that they tend to be a little bit more under the radar in some of the more conservative jurisdictions and the rural parts of the state.
Now, we did see a court case in Washington this year where a woman who received a medical marijuana recommendation from a doctor in California was denied a medical necessity defense in Washington. You know, Dominic, is there any sense that that aspect of medical access could change?
There was a bill introduced to protect people like Sharon Tracy. She was the woman in Skamania County who had an authorization from California because she had received her authorization from a doctor while caring for her mother who was suffering from cancer in California. When she came up, she cultivated five plants, which should have been covered by the law, but on the technicality that her authorization was from out of state, She was arrested, and she was convicted by the Washington State Supreme Court, who in their ruling said reluctantly that she was guilty and strongly urged the legislature to clarify the law to protect people like her. A bill was introduced by Representative Sherry Appleton, but it unfortunately died in House committee. We're hoping to see a similar bill introduced next year or in 2009.
And to round out here today, it does seem like elected officials in Washington are really well informed on this issue. So, you know, Dominic, is this years of lobbying and education? Is this paying off now?
You know, I would love to say that the medical marijuana movement and the marijuana law reform movement had done an excellent job of educating the legislature. But I think it is can be attributed to a couple greater factors. And the first is that medical marijuana patients have done a great job of getting this issue into the media. And there have been a lot of feature articles, a lot of stories about individual patients. But I think the real issue is that once the bill was introduced to the legislature, a lot of people came forward who had lost someone from cancer. They'd lost someone from HIV or some other condition. And they had tremendous compassion for people suffering from those ailments and people who are in their families. And I don't think that they're as educated as they need to be, but ultimately, compassion won out. We found that 80% of people in Washington state support medical marijuana law reform. So I think when faced with the choice of whether to pass a bill or to block its passage, legislators in Washington are doing the right thing. But there's still a lot of education work to do so that they know which patients need it and which changes need to be made to the law to ensure that they have safe access.
And also, I know in the past, Dominic, you were an organizer for HempFest. It's coming up pretty quickly here.
Absolutely we are. It's on the third weekend of August. It's the biggest extravaganza in the world with six stages, dozens of speakers, dozens of bands, and hundreds of vendors with hemp wares from all over the world. It's right down on the Seattle waterfront with a beautiful view of downtown. So people should come down. It's free, and they should make their voice heard for marijuana law reform.
Right on. Well, Dominic, I want to thank you for joining us here today to talk about medical marijuana there in Washington State.
Chris, you're so welcome. Thank you. It's always good to be on the Normal Podcast.
Thank you again, Dom. Dominic Holden is on the board of directors for National Normal and is also on the board of Washington State Normal. We have links to Washington State Normal on our website today at normalaudiostash.com.
What's up, guys? This is Ms. High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Now it's time to get to some of our event audio here today on the Audio Stash. This comes from the April 25th benefit concert at the Belcourt Theater in Nashville for Bernie Ellis. You can find out more about Bernie at SaveBernie'sFarm.com. First, we'll hear Alan St. Pierre, who served as MC of the event that night. Then some incredibly nice music from Jonelle Mosser, and she also makes some great comments regarding the event that evening. Here's audio from Nashville, courtesy of WRFN, that's WRFN-FM in Nashville. We have links to WRFN's website on our website today at normalaudiostash.com.
Much to my mother's chagrin, I'm the executive director of Normal in Washington, D.C. Before we kick off tonight, I just want to let you know that there is a line buying tickets, and we don't want to get them out, miss out on this great beginning of the music. So we're going to start in about 5 minutes, just to give you a heads up, and then we'll start the program proper. But I just want to thank every single one of you here who's come here to support Bernie and certainly, more importantly, is that Bernie is the personification of 788,000 marijuana arrests per year in this country. By the time we leave this building, over 140 people will be arrested in the United States. So after 70 years of prohibition, this concert, this event is just one more part of changing a really bad public policy. So thank you very much, and we look forward to conversing throughout the night. Thank you. Okay, everybody, here we go. We're going to start tonight officially. We've now got the line down to a manageable size. We're going to try to sell this place out tonight if we can. In support of Bernie tonight, there are 12 limited editions of this great poster that is original and on hemp paper. There are only 12 of them available. I would like to pick one up and bring it back to my office in Washington, D.C. They're $75 a piece, and they're going to go very quickly. So if you want one, don't hesitate in the break of the music. Again, thank you all for coming out here tonight and celebrating personal freedom, cognitive liberty, and just simply wanting to change a law through common sense and decency. And that's what we're doing here tonight. And we are blessed to have musicians that are supportive of the local community, and maybe specifically on this topic as well. The first act tonight is Suzanne Feiring. Jazz composer, vocalist, composer, has traveled and toured the U.S. and Europe, and her CD, Paris Without His Kiss, was played on 250 radio stations nationwide. She has 5 songs in the Smithsonian. That's pretty cool. And I can't imagine how you got 2 songs into the Baseball Hall of Fame. For a Red Sox fan like me, that's pretty cool. And she has sung country on Oprah, Desperate Housewives, and more. Suzanne Feiring.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather sends me and my Joey ain't together. Keeps raining all the time. Life is bare, pain and misery everywhere. Stormy weather sends me and my Joey ain't together. Keeps raining all the time. Since he went away, the blues came out and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair is gonna get me. If I pray, Lord above, won't you let me walk in that sun once more? Can't go on. Everything I have is gone. Since me and my Joe ain't together, keeps raining all the time, talking, yeah, all the time, play it. So much. I got to be honest with you, I'm a little bit raspy, and it's not because I've been smoking things that people don't want me to smoke. It's because I've been working like a dog in the studio for about a week now, but I'm going to use that to my advantage. I really wish I had some like rock and roll jingle to sing or something. The autumn leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips kisses, the wind-blown hands I used to know. Oh, but since you went away, the days grow colder, and soon I'll hear old winter come. And I miss you most of all, my darling, when those autumn leaves start to fall, yeah. Jean-Pierre, la vie de dette, la vie de dette, la vie de dette, la vie de double pour la vie de deux, ma bombe, ma bombe, pas de sort, ça de sort, ça de tiro, tiro, oui. Petit roux, ma vie de doute, c'est beau, ça t'a vu les dettes. Bye, à ton bon, oui, la ou la ou la di, ma bote. So don't ever bother with a double 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 set, 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 the summer kisses, the wind-blown hands I used to know, oh yeah. But since you went away, the days grow colder, and soon I'll hear old winter call. And I miss you most of all, my darling, when those autumn start to fall, and I miss you most of all, my darling.
That was audio from a Nashville event at the Belcourt Theater in Nashville on April 25th to benefit Bernie Ellis. You can find out more about Bernie at SaveBernie'sFarm.com. We heard Alan St. Pierre, Normal's executive director, emceeing the event, and music from Jonelle Mosser. Thanks to WRFN in Nashville for supplying the audio from the event. We have links to WRFN and Bernie's website on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. To Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.